Now, on historyradio.org, At the Bottom of the Sea, an original radio play created by Michael Henroquin. The story was written as a tribute to the science fiction genre, and especially the alien movies by Ridley Scott.
Years into the future, as the age of oil draws to a close, the Norwegian government decides to build mines on the ocean floor. They decide to combine deep water research with commercial mining and build an inhabited base at one of the deepest points of the Norwegian continental shelf. 50 people will live for periods of half a year at a depth of 2,000 meters in a base constructed of carbon nanotubes and titanium. The base has its own greenhouse, 3D printers, a small nuclear reactor, a new and safe configuration commercialized by NASA the previous year, supercomputers, and a gene and seed bank. The outpost will, besides biological research, extract minerals from the seafloor and ship them to the surface, where freighters wait to bring the ore to the shore. The purpose is to exploit and develop Norway's great maritime technologies, an advantage that Norway is on the brink of losing as the oil industry is dismantled.
Damn the rain. Damn this whole job. I can't even see the mountains in the distance. There is snow on the peaks now. There always is at this time in Kimsa. Norway never was famous for its weather. It's beautiful, they all say, but the weather sucks. There are puddles out there in the runway. Oh, thank God for these heavy military boots. They are uncomfortable, but they are warm and they are never wet. When I told Cardi I was going to be gone for a while, she said she would take care of the cat. She would take care of it, she said. She is such a sweet old woman. Reminds me of Grandma. She is gone now, of course, but Cardi is sweet. She even told me she worries about me, told me that I don't exist outside of the gym. She wants me to find a woman and settle down. I could never do that. It's not my style.
This man sitting next to me in the helicopter, Hans Storm or something, he is some kind of scientist. He looks like a biologist. Now he is looking at me. A ruddy, bald man with a happy face and a beard, in his mid-30s. Not muscular, but does a lot of outdoors walking and hiking, I bet. Not my type, though. Also, he is married and adores his wife. They are so lucky, those two. He told me this cute story in the hallway about a conversation he had with his son, bragging about his children. They all do. My son is so clever. My son does this and my son does that. He has even named his next child, even if she is not born yet. Leonora, she is to be called. His son had asked him if there were strange creatures at the bottom of the sea like there are in outer space. In outer space? There are no creatures in outer space. It's just a vast, empty nothing, all dark and depressing. God, I wish I wasn't so depressed. Also, I wish I was divorced. My husband is an unfaithful pig. God, I can't even think about the time I found him in bed with that bitch. I walked out on him that night. I asked him to go to hell. I hope he dies someday. I really do.
As morning breaks, the helicopters take off from Lungnes Airport in Tromsø and disappear into the mist and fog which hides the town. Above the clouds, however, the horizon unfolds as the silhouettes of the aircraft, like a flock of migrating birds, head out into the open sea. It is a shaky ride. Gusts of cold northerly wind sweep across the foaming waves far below. 1 hour passes, then two. Then finally Valhalla appears. No, not the mythological home of the Norse gods, but a converted oil rig, a steel and concrete monster looming above the surface. It stands steady like a rock in an ocean world which constantly moves.
So, we have arrived at last. I must say, I had my doubts when we came in for a landing just now. The winds really grabbed the sides of the helicopter. I thought we were going to crash there for a second, but they never do. Pilots are men of ice, I suppose. Steady on their hands in any kind of situation. And this guy who is guiding us on board, he really looks like he has been on a deserted island for some time. Unshaven. Unclean. My kind of guy. They are tough men out here on the high seas. There are cables everywhere. I wonder what they are off for. Probably something that these eggheads have come up with. I'm glad I'm just a diver and not a scientist. Haven't got the brains for it anyway.
There is the diving vessel. The guide really stinks of sweat. I mean, they do have showers out here. It's all very unnecessary. But I guess when there are few women, the men tend to become a little eccentric. This guy really needs somebody to take care of him. Fortunately, it's not going to be me. Now we are going into the submarine. It's tight. Glad I am not claustrophobic. Comfortable, though, and there is a huge storage space in the back. I guess they need it for groceries. Wonder what kind of food I will be serving down there. Squid? I hate squid. I will not be serving that filth. Oh my God, what's that weird sound? And now my stomach tickles. This is like a merry-go-round. I want to scream. Better not. These macho guys will think I am a wimp.
The submarine descends slowly into the abyss. Outside, it has one big light at the head, which barely penetrates the murky water. Inside the titanium hull, there is the feeling of being locked in a can. Not much is said. The faces of the men and women are all quiet with anticipation, for they are heading to a depth where only a handful of men have been. They know the pressure squeezing in on them is gigantic. If it were not for this little marvel of modern technology, they would be crushed like an insect under a heavy boot. Then suddenly there is a metallic noise. The whole vessel shakes. There is a clunk, a hissing sound, and a sigh when the door opens to the underwater base and the pressures equalize.
So, here we are. I can't wait to get out of this can. Hang on, don't block my way. Better be polite. Better not cheat in line. We're all getting off. Where else can you go? Oh, there's a gorgeous woman waiting for us. My God. This job has perks, obviously. Now she's leading us in. A good welcome. I'm satisfied.
It seems quite spacious in here. I guess they've had architects design it for comfort. They managed to hide the fact that the walls are over a meter thick somehow. But who is this dolled-up bimbo who is guiding us in? Women like that always get the great jobs. They think they are hired for their brains, but they have never been plain. So they don't realize that they are privileged.
Now it is time for me to introduce myself. My name is Colonel Peter Edvudson, and I will be running this base for the next year. I am an experienced military officer, but I cannot tell you what I have seen and what I have done in my working life. I am not allowed by the powers that be. I have never been very proud of who I am or what I have done, but somehow I have grown older, more confident, if you like. So they gave me this job. I must introduce myself to the crowd now, all those who will be serving under me. I will tell them about the history of the base. It was, after all, made possible by Nobel Prize-winning innovations in material science and nanotechnology. Norwegians, Americans, Chinese, Russians, they all cooperated for once. They left their disagreements at the surface and built something. Of course, I must give thanks to the politicians. They must not be forgotten. Suck up to one of them, and then any cushy job can be landed.
How long will this old geezer colonel go on? Who has he forgotten to praise? His mother, perhaps? Wait, now I think he's done. Yes, thank God. And there's that lovely guide again. She has terrific breasts. And now we're heading down the corridor to our bunks. Oh, I'm completely exhausted. It has been a long journey. I need a nap.
These quarters are quite excellent, actually. There is floor space and a huge flat screen above every bed, and a keyboard that folds out. My goodness, I am in spaceship control room. Now that awful woman is leaving, I will tell her to have a nice day. It is my way of saying, fuck you. Now I will shut the door behind her. It's been long since I prayed. 5 times a day, my father always told me. Or else.
It is a starry night now in the world above. We couldn't tell down here, but we try to keep an illusion of normality. The daily routines must be kept. That is essential on any base. These are not military men, though. They are fortune seekers or specialists. Some have come for the huge pay that comes with risks. Some have come because they want to be the first to live at the bottom of the Atlantic. So why am I here? I don't seem to feel much excitement. There is so much to be done. Even now, while everyone sleeps, I sit at my office desk and double-check everything. There is no margin of error here. I am responsible for these people. I am here for duty, I suppose. They told me, so I did it. Just like they once told me to pull the trigger.
There's an automatic wake system in place? They should have said something. At 6 o'clock, a small alarm started sounding, and I was so confused I didn't know what was going on. But I am up now, doing my push-ups. It's so important to stay fit. Soon I will report to Colonel Edwardson. I wonder what he's like. I didn't like his welcome speech, though. It was too long. I don't like people who talk too much. They're not to be trusted. But somehow I got the feeling that Edwardson was reading from a script written by some asshole politician.
This is the kitchen, and I have two twin teenagers working under me, Inga and Nils. I have never been in charge of others. Fortunately, I am a little older than they are, so my authority comes naturally. I don't have to pretend to be somebody else. I always was a working stiff. Let others order people around. I just like to cook. We have to carry the groceries into the storage area and the freezer. There is quite a selection of produce. We can make something nice that people will enjoy. Something which will make them pay compliments to the chef. It is always so nice when people are grateful.
I had my first report from my science officer today, August Blix. This is a man I truly respect. I was fortunate to have him on the base. Everybody says he is a genius, but he is also a kind man. There is actually another genius on board, but he is a little strange. Henrik Abelson, Blix's protege. I don't know how the two of them met, but Blix has taken him under his wing. It is weird, though, for Abelson is not normal. He didn't have a normal childhood, I think. Perhaps somebody beat him or something. I don't know how people become what they are. I just know that there is something fundamentally wrong with the grown man I see today. Well, anyway, Blix also got his new biologist, Hans Storm. A very nice man, very decent in every way. Everybody likes him. Another nerd, of course, as bad as they come.
Blix is such a pathetic man. He talks about all the creatures in the ocean as if their lives matter. They are animals, for Christ's sake. What they feel is irrelevant. My dear Henrik, he calls me, as if he were my father. He should be happy that he is not my father. If he were, I would put a bullet in that huge brain of his. I must admit that Blix is smart. I am smart, they say. And I can make almost any calculation in my mind. I don't need a computer. But Blix, even if he relies on his computer, has some special ability to see everything in perspective. It is a shame to admit. I don't think I like him as much as I respect him. Then, of course, there was that new biologist today, Hans Storm. He is so average. I can have much fun with him, I think.
Here I am outside the big man's headquarters. I want to make a good impression. Hang on, there's a man coming out the door. It's the Nobel laureate, Blix. Better stand to attention. Oh, he seems preoccupied, though. I enter the bridge. It's not what I expected.
Type 3 report.
T-SOMCON report.
County of SOMGAIN, IJ2 band contact, signal strength 2, possible navigation radar, step up parameter, analyzing.
T-SOMCON, I.
Report.
Thank you.
So many screens, I wonder what they're all for. Some show the outside of the base. They must have lights and cameras out there. Then there are ROVs, quite large ones, for freighting rock back and forth. Here comes the big man. Better stand to attention. He smiles. He likes me. That's a relief. It's like I thought, he talks straight from the gut. He's an officer, all right. But he has been everywhere. Must have, in order to get this top job.
I am still dumbfounded by the events of this morning. It is not my new diver. He is a great guy, military man like myself. No, it was what happened afterwards. I was showing him the screens, giving him the tour, when we stopped by Ari, the Icelandic gamer, who is in control of the ROVs. Then suddenly the ground starts shaking, the lights flicker, and the monitors go black. "An earthquake!" I shouted. "Secure all hatches and close all valves. Recall all ROVs and secure the sub." Suddenly, everything goes dark in the base. The walls and the ceilings squeak. It is as if the base is about to implode under the enormous pressure. Then the red backup lights come on. "Partial lighting restored," I yelled. "What about external sensors and camera?" I feared it was the end of the world, a volcanic eruption or something like that. Then there was quiet. An unpleasant sort of quiet, when nobody knew what was going on. We checked screens, read numbers. Then the base started to shake again, and we realized that there was tension on the cable to the surface. It had to be cut, and I had to risk a man's life to do it. The tension upset the pressure in the western section, you see. The cable needed to be cut, and there was only one way of doing it. Entering the section and pulling a lever.
I didn't think about what I was doing when I volunteered. I just did it. In a split second, I ran through many doors and opened a pressurized hatch. The difference in pressure made the door swing open so violently that I was thrown clear. For a moment, I passed out. I was dizzy and I felt nausea when I came to. I was simply too sick to stand, so I crawled across the floor, grabbed a levy and fainted. Somehow the weight of my body falling backward was enough for the levy to move. The wire was cut somehow. I only had brief recollection of what followed. A lot of weird lights, a lot of dizziness, the sound of Edwardson shouting.
Fortunately, the diver survived. I must say I am really impressed by his bravery and determination. I was very lucky that he was around. A man who can make a decision about life and death in a split second and then risk it all. No thinking, no goodbye letters. He just acted. If we were in the army, he would be awarded medals, lots of them, because he saved us all. We carried him to the decompression chamber, and that is where he is now. Meanwhile, me and the others got the outside cameras working. We sent one of the ROVs out and discovered a large trawler that had fallen to the ocean floor only a short distance from the base. We saw no bodies, though. At first, we thought it was Valhalla and were very relieved. But then, suddenly, somebody noted a huge object in the water 500 meters behind the trawler. The ROV made its way slowly towards a large, ominous shadow. That was Valhalla. 250 people were probably all gone, and along with them, our only connection to the outside world.
Find out what happens in the next episode of At the Bottom of the Sea.